People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply. People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply.
That was one thing that was brought up when we would try and talk about finances. I was told that I was always in my masculine energy, and it really messed with my head. Hello, and welcome to Lanisha's podcast, Future Rich. I'm your host, Barbara Ginty, and I'm also a CFP, which is a Certified Financial Planner. And I am very excited to welcome our guest today, Jessica. Hi, Jessica.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for joining us. Will you tell the listeners a little bit about yourself and your submission? So we haven't had a guest like this in a bit. We had this very early on in this show.
Yeah. So I am 30 years old. I'm almost 31, like in 2 weeks. So I'm hanging on to the 30 as long as I can. I am a project manager for a medical device company. I'm a nurse by education. And I work remotely, but I live in the Milwaukee area. My company's based out in Boston. So I'm very fortunate to, you know, get the perks of remote work. But I get the nice pay of, you know, like the medical device community out east. So that's been a real blessing.
It feels like a win.
Yeah, it's a win.
Okay. And then how much do you make annually?
So I have a base salary of $127,000. I get a 12% bonus, and then I also get restricted stock units. So this year, it'll probably be a total amount of $156,000.
That's fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Did you start as a nurse?
I did. I started as a nurse where I was working at an outpatient clinic, and I think that year I only made about $30,000 annually. So it's gone up considerably.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
So I remember when I wrote into you, I've been listening to your podcast, like I've just been binging it because I love hearing about all of these different women and where they come from. And you did one a while back with your editor, and you guys talked about the differences in income or dating somebody or being with somebody that or dealing with financial infidelity, which I thought was really interesting. And actually, over a year ago, I was supposed to get married, so I was engaged. And I called off my wedding probably 6 weeks before the date.
Oof.
Okay. And it was an easy decision. At the same time, it was very difficult. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, it was. But we were living together. I had previously owned a condo in the downtown Milwaukee area. I had sold it when we got engaged, thinking that the real estate market wasn't going to be as hot. And boy, was I wrong. Mm-hmm. It's like the Milwaukee area, you still can't buy anything. And prices are crazy. But I sold my condo. He lived in Illinois, so I moved to go live with him.
Okay.
And then like 6 weeks before the wedding, all of this stuff came out, and I give him credit because he basically said, I feel like I've been pretending to be somebody in order to be with you, and I don't want to do that anymore. And I realized, okay, well then we obviously can't get married. And I was the one that was financing the wedding. And because of our income disparities, he was always very insecure about how much I was making. And in being insecure, when I tried to talk about finances, it turned into a fight, and it turned into a conversation where I was.
It was like a battle, not a conversation.
Exactly. And when I would try and bring it up, it would turn into a it would turn into a fight where it was, well, you're only concerned about money. And because I had no idea what his expenses looked like, I got very tight with mine, especially with financing the wedding primarily on my own. And then when I ended things and I came back to him and said, okay, well, I looked up everything that the wedding was going to cost, and with canceling and not getting deposits back, this is what you owe me if we split halfway down the middle. And he said, I have no money to pay you back. It turns out that there was a lot of insecure spending that he was doing on his end where I think in an attempt to show me that he cared about me or to kind of hide insecurities, he was spending a lot when he definitely couldn't afford to. So he had no money whatsoever to pay me back. And it turned into a situation where I had to move back in with my parents. I'm still there. You can see I'm in my childhood bedroom with pink walls. So, so that was a little humbling. But I really took that as an opportunity to really buckle down and just really focus on saving. And that's always something that, not always something I've been good at, but it's been something that I've been really good at educating myself on, and really kind of owning the fact that I am good with money and I'm proud of what I earn. And just because you are a high earner and you're a good saver, and you're very independent in that way, that doesn't make you a masculine individual. Because that was one thing that was brought up when we would try and talk about finances. I was told that I was always in my masculine energy, and it really messed with my head.
Yes, I also have been told I have a lot of masculine energy. You can be successful and still have feminine energy. I think that you would. Not that we do relationship advice on this podcast. And honestly, if we did, like, nobody would listen because I'm horrible. But I think that you just need somebody who is self-assured and secure in who they are. And then it isn't as much of an issue, right? Because I agree that if he was spending money he didn't have, that was either delusion of, like, maybe next month I'm going to make the money, which is also a problem, right? Mm-hmm. You have to be rational. So if you think all of a sudden you're going to start making money next month or the following month, you're going to figure it out. It's a little bit of delusion, in my opinion. Or it's insecure. So you're doing something to make yourself feel better, which it sounds like is one or the other with him. But I agree. I don't think it's talked about a lot. We did talk about it, I think, with my producer, is I do think when you're a female and you're successful and independent and you don't need somebody, right? You want somebody, but you don't need a partner, right? You'll be fine on your own and you'll be successful on your own. You were successful before him, you'll be successful after him. And so I think when you don't need somebody, it's a little bit of a different footing for the relationship, right? You're choosing to be with the person. It's a choice, but you don't need them for anything.
Mm-hmm. And it's so funny that you say that, because one time when we were having an argument, he said, you know, it's frustrating because you don't need me. And I remember so vividly, I didn't even have to think about responding. I said, no, I don't, but I want you. And wouldn't you rather be with somebody that wants to be with you as opposed to needing
and chooses
to be
every time? Yeah. Yeah. Chooses to be with you on a regular basis. And it's not because of a financial need or any other thing relating to money. It's a choice, right?
Yeah,
I agree. But I do think, my personal opinion, I do think it makes it a little bit harder as a female when you are in control of your own finances, which is the whole reason I do the podcast, is I feel very, very strongly that women need to understand their own finances always, whether or not you're in a relationship, you need to know, which is why we only bring on a female guest, because I think often it's really easy to hand that off and then turn a blind eye. And hopefully turning a blind eye, everything goes fine. But often it doesn't go fine. If there's a problem in the relationship, now you also didn't know about your financial situation and maybe there was a problem there, or maybe now you're needing to learn something in the midst of some other, you know, emotional distress. So I think it's a great thing that you make your own money, that you're successful financially. And I'm sorry that it happened to come out through the relationship but I think it was him. It was just, he was insecure about not having equal footing. And that's something he has to work on. You can't change that, right? You shouldn't tone down your success to make your partner more comfortable.
Yeah. And it was definitely a little bit of a shift, because I grew up in a household where I had wonderful parents. They did such a good job, but they're, you know, I come from a very conservative Catholic household where it's, you know, you get married, you have children. And I had it in my head, like, okay, by the time I'm 30 years old, I need to be married and at least considering starting a family. And then all of this happened and I realized, yeah, that wasn't such a great idea to like put such a hard deadline on something as big as choosing a life partner. Yeah. So now my perspective has been, it's shifted considerably just seeing how bad that could have gone. I'm thinking to myself, yeah, marriage is no cup of tea, especially if it's with the wrong person. Like you need to be with somebody that shares the same values and is supportive of your goals. So something that I've really shifted in thinking over for the next like 10 years, it's like, okay, well, how do I envision my life being? How do I want to grow as an individual over the next 10 years, not even factoring in a life partner? Of course, that would be wonderful. I do want to share my life with somebody, mm-hmm. but at this point, I'm not holding myself back, or I'm not going to dim my own light just to appease somebody else to say that I'm with someone.
No, you don't need to.
Yeah.
I decided at 39, so there's hope.
Yeah.
So
yeah. Yeah. And the more I talk to women that I really admire in my workplace, they always like, they've gotten married later and they're doing really well and they're so happy that they didn't rush into anything. Mm-hmm. But yeah, something that I did want to talk to you about today is over the next 10 years, like I've been thinking more and more about it and how I want to put my money to work, and not necessarily I'd like to be financially independent from my current job. I love what I do. Mm-hmm. But I would love to get to a point where I am able to buy a business and have some cash flow coming in that way. And then the other thing that I have been thinking about is buying my childhood home from my parents.
Okay.
And that's something that's at minimum like 10 years down the road. So these are lofty goals. And I have time, but I'd like to start planning those so that when the time comes, I have the financial footing to execute them.
Yep, to do it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think those are all great goals. So yeah, why don't we dive into what your expenses are now and like where you are with savings and debt?
Yeah, so no debt, no student loans.
Okay, so you got the wedding paid off.
Yeah. Luckily, I had a very big slush fund for that. So I just paid it all in cash.
And did you ever get the money from him, or did you end up paying everything?
No. So he did not pay me back at all for any of the wedding expenses. I did put his suit on my credit card because he couldn't afford it at the time. And he did say, I'll pay you back for the suit. So he paid me in $200 monthly installments for 1 year to pay me back. So that was a little over $2,000. So I did get something back. It wasn't total. I probably paid about $15,000 out of pocket.
Okay. To walk away from that. Mm-hmm. But better, I think, to have walked away. Yeah. Than have gone through it. And what was it, the impetus was that you were sitting down going, crunching all the numbers for the wedding and it started a big fight, or how did it happen?
I came home from a work trip and I remember I was exhausted. I came home at like 6 a.m. and he had a therapy session. That's what I liked about him, is that he was seeing a therapist before we even started dating each other, which I thought was a big green flag. And I guess it was. He just hadn't worked out everything. But he said, yeah, basically, I've been pretending to be somebody that I'm not in order to be with you. And he wanted to postpone the wedding for, and he didn't specifically say how long, but he wanted to push the wedding off so that he could focus on being more honest about who he is. And at that point I said, okay, well then if that's truly the case, then we shouldn't be getting married at all because you've been pretending to be somebody that you're not. And then after I had left and I, on my own, went through and tallied up all of the wedding costs.
Expenses.
Yes. And I called him and was like, okay, well, if we were to split it down the middle, this is what you would owe. And I said, here are the receipts. I backed it all up. And he said, I absolutely can't pay you back. And that's when it came out, like, okay, that's like, you were spending money on things that we definitely could not afford.
Yeah. And you didn't realize that.
And I had no idea. Like, there was one night we went out dancing and he ordered bottle service. And I clearly, like, and now it, looking back, it makes so much more sense. I'm like, yeah, well, we didn't need to spend $300 on a bottle of tequila that was worth 50. Like, and it was one of those things where
it's never a good idea.
No. And he tried to reassure me and was like, no, I just got my tax refund. It's okay. Like, I can afford this. And I'm like, are you putting 10% towards investments like we talked about? And he was like, yeah, of course I'm going to do that. And then I realized that he indeed was not. So
he would just yes you to death.
He would, yeah, like,
yes, I'm doing it. Yes, I can afford it.
Yes, exactly.
Well, I think 15,000, no one wants to lose 15,000, but it could have been a lot worse.
I tell everybody, I'm like, 15,000 was the cost of my freedom and I would pay it again. So,
right. Yeah. Because someday we've had a couple, I think we've had two guests on and then one expert who had had financial infidelity. And sometimes the numbers can be a bit large.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think that's good. Okay. So no debt. So no student loan debt, no debt from the relationship. And then how are you doing with savings?
Savings? I have about $40,000 in a high yield savings account.
Great. Okay. And then do you have a work retirement plan?
I do. So I have an old 401k through my company. My company was bought out a year ago. And I guess because of the IRS rules, I can't roll that over into the new company 401k. I don't know. I was just told I can't. But in my old 401k, I have about $106,000. And in my current 401k, I have $25,200.
And do you get a match?
I do. I get... It's, how do they phrase it? It's up to 75% of the first 6%.
I don't know, like, who sits in a room and is like, let's make this really confusing.
Right. Yeah.
It's just they want you to up your contribution, but they don't want to match dollar for dollar. Okay, that's good. So you have a match up to 75% of the first 6%. And then you said you also have a Roth?
I do. I haven't been contributing just because I know I'm teetering on the edge.
You're teetering.
Yeah. I have about, I'd say 15,000 in a Roth.
Okay, so for the Roth, your modified adjusted gross income for 2024, you start to phase out at $146,000 of income, and you're completely phased out at $161,000.
Yeah.
So depends on what your accountant says for that, but even if, it's not going to be a full amount. That's how you're doing well. And then how much do you have total with your RSUs?
Total right now, unvested, is about, I'd say $43,000.
Okay, great. And how long do you have to stay there for everything to vest? And I know they probably keep issuing them every year, so it's a rolling.
Yeah. So typically for the last 2 years, I've gotten $26,000 of RSUs annually. A third of it vests once every 3 years. A third vests every year.
Okay.
Like, I think I got my first RSU payout through my company since we merged was actually at the beginning of June.
Okay.
And that was $8,000 before tax.
And then is there anything else I should know about?
I have a lot of money in after-tax brokerage accounts. Well,
how much?
And that's the other thing, too. I have a lot of after-tax brokerage accounts. I have like four.
Okay.
So one of them has $35,000.
Okay.
The other one has about $15,000.
Okay.
And then I have about $22,000 in single stocks.
Okay.
And about $12,000 in an account, a Fundrise account.
Okay.
And one account, this was a very silly investment I did when I was younger and didn't really understand what I was doing, but it's called Vinovest. It's like a wine investing account.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I was like I was teaching myself about how to diversify my money, and I kept seeing ads on all of these influencers' pages about, you know, like investing in wine.
Investing in wine.
Like, yeah, and I was like, oh, okay, that sounds like a good idea. And luckily, I only put in $2,000, so it's not a substantial sum.
Okay.
So right now it's sitting at $2,070.
So you made $70 on that one.
Yeah, $2,070.
Okay. So you have about 86,000 total?
Yes, I would say so.
Great. That's fantastic. Okay, anything else that you know about?
I guess in terms of expenses, my expenses are very low.
Yeah, let's talk about your expenses.
Yeah, so I live at home with my parents. I live rent-free. My parents are very generous, and we have a really wonderful relationship. So that's a very positive, fortunate thing. Yeah. So my take home is probably, I get paid biweekly, and my take home is about $2,700. I probably, I save about $1,500 a month. I probably spend no more than $2,000, and the rest I just throw into after tax accounts.
After tax accounts. Okay. And how long have you been living at home?
Since last March. So March of 2023.
Okay. See, and then, so you're able to save a ton. That's how you've accumulated. Yeah. Okay. Perfect. So I guess I don't need to. I normally, when people come on the show, I'm really like, okay, we're going to save four. So I don't think I need to do that with you.
No.
You don't have any expenses.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform. With over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply.
Fall into big savings, all in the Kroger app. Get packs of juicy red, green, black, or tri-color variety seedless grapes for $3.99 each. Then get tender boneless chuck roast or steaks for $4.99 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Taking care of your health isn't always easy, but it should at least be simple. That's why for the last 3 years, I've been drinking AG1 every day with no exceptions. It's just one scoop mixed in water once a day, every day, and it makes me feel ready to take on my day. That's because each serving of AG1 delivers my daily dose of vitamins, minerals, pre and probiotics, and more. It's a powerful, healthy habit. It's also powerfully simple. With AG1, I know I'm getting essential brain, gut, and immune health support with vitamins, probiotics, and nutrients from Whole Foods. I like to think of it as my nutritional insurance. I know I'm covering my nutritional bases from the very start of the day. If there's one product I had to recommend to elevate your health, it's AG1, and that's why I've partnered with them for so long. So if you want to take ownership of your health, start with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free 1 year supply of vitamin D3 plus K2 and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first purchase exclusively at drinkag1.com/futurerich. That's drinkag1.com/futurerich. Check it out.
Well, then let's talk a little bit about buying a business and then buying a home. So I would say at this stage, you're set up really well for both. So having no debt, I think, is critical. Let's start with buying a business. I think it's really good to go into buying a business with having a lot of cash on hand. Sometimes you have to, depends on how you buy the business. It depends on what type of business, how they're going to be valuing the business, and then like what the expectation is for purchase. Usually it's structured over time.
Okay.
So, well, I guess it just depends what you're buying. But if we talked about like a personal service business, you'd buy based on the revenue. You'd want to retain the clients. So you wouldn't put it, you wouldn't pay 100%. Some businesses, like a website, you might buy it all at once, right? Website mm-hmm. stays the same. You're getting recurring traffic. But if there's like a client list or anything like that, you'd only would pay a percentage now. There'd be have to be some, make sure there's retention of the clients, right? So buying a business is pretty broad, but I think that to put yourself in a strategic position to buy a business is where you are now, right? So you mm-hmm. have low expenses, no debt, and a lot of after-tax money, because when you're going to go buy a business, you're going to need after-tax money. And it would be the same for a home, right? So you're going to want 20% ideally down to buy a home, so you don't have primary mortgage insurance, right? So you have the down mm-hmm. payment. I wouldn't advise doing both at the same time.
Right.
So I think that from a 10-year standpoint, I think I where I would put it, and this is personal preference, is I'd almost do the business first and get the cash flow going, and then maybe from there do the home. I will say by doing it that way, it will be harder to qualify for a home, because when you go to get a home, they don't love entrepreneurs. You will still get approved, but the process is more difficult because you don't have a W-2, and they're going to want to see a longer time horizon. So that said, if you buy a business, you're going to need to have that set revenue and have consistent income to get approved for a mortgage. If you do the reverse, which is buy a home first, I would spread out then buying. I think either way, you're going to have, I would recommend a time gap between both. Okay. If you buy the home first, you're going to use up more of your cash. You're going to have higher expenses. I just think it will put a bit of pressure on you for the business, because if the business isn't generating the cash flow you need, you still have to make a mortgage payment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point. And in terms of buying a business, like this is, I'm very early in. I haven't even talked to any mm-hmm. brokers yet or consultants. Is there a certain amount of cash that you recommend? So it's, let's just say that I'm focused on buying a business that is going for $500,000. Do I need to have a certain
kind
amount
of
cash on hand? I don't even know yet at this point. I want to buy a business, not another job. I guess that's what I'd like for it to be a little bit more hands off. Mm-hmm. That's not helping answer the question, but like right now,
I don't know many businesses that are super hands off initially.
Okay.
I could be wrong. Here's my attitude about, I don't think real estate is passive in the regards that, I mean, everyone who's listening to the podcast knows I have, my house here in Utah has been like pretty easy. The one in New York has been like, it's like my problem child. I don't think it's as passive. It can be when you have a good tenant and there's no problems with the property and no problems with the tenant, it can go smoothly. That is not guaranteed, right? And so real estate isn't, in my mind, if you go into it thinking you're just going to get a check, yeah, you could hire a management company and turn a blind eye. But usually when you put a lot of money into something, you care.
Yeah.
Right? So like you're a successful, I'm going to guess, type A person, you know, you get things done. So if you hire a property management company and then the tenant's calling you because property manager didn't answer, it's going to really annoy you. You're giving 25% to them when they're not getting it done. It can go swimmingly, but it's not guaranteed to go swimmingly. I think of it the same way. You can have a job that's like really easy. You go in, you like it, you make a good amount of money. It's the same way with the business. You could buy a business, everything goes swimmingly, you make good money, it's fairly easy, but you could also buy a business that requires a lot of work or has a really bad year. So I would just go into it more with the mindset that not necessarily that you're buying a job, because some businesses you're literally just buying yourself a job, but others like you might have to get it. You have to put some work in to get it to where you want it to be. Does that make sense? Like maybe the owner is running the business. And so maybe then you have to look at the revenue and say, okay, I don't want to be the one running the business every day. So now I need to hire a manager. Mm-hmm. So then the profit margin is going to be different because I'm going to have more staff, stuff like that. So I would start investigating. My advice would be like start investigating it now. And if it's selling for $500,000, my guess would be the revenue is somewhere around, what, $150,000 a year?
Probably, yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I would say so.
Give or take, using a 3x gross revenue multiple. Mm-hmm. So usually this is a sell for some multiple, depends on industry. But if we just use 3, then it's generating $150,000 a year, and you're going to buy it for, let's just say, $450,000.
Okay.
So then it depends on the type of business, like how that would be structured.
Okay. So one thing that I have thought about, I have a brother. He is a little bit younger than me, but he's an accountant. He is working to get his CPA right now. And I did float the idea with him, like, hey, how would it be if like we bought a CPA firm together? And obviously you being the
tax practice.
Yeah, like, but you being the CPA, understanding how it all works can help with the operations.
So, okay, I love that idea. There's also franchises for tax practices.
Okay.
So if you want a roadmap and they tell you exactly what to do, exactly how to run it. So, because I think there's twofold with a business. One, there's how do you run a business, right? That's a skill set. Like, yeah. What type of insurance do you need? Like, all the things you need to think about with, I talked to a girlfriend of mine who's been in corporate America, and I was like, oh, well, just throw up a website. And she was like, I don't know how to build a website. And I was like, really? You don't have, when you work for a company, they don't say, hey, we want to update the website. Could you handle that? Like, but when you're an entrepreneur and you're like, oh, I need to update the website. Like, you hire someone to do the website, but if you just need to tweak it, I can't go back to you. Well, you could hire someone every week to say, actually, I need to update, blah, blah, blah. You just learn how to do stuff as an entrepreneur, right? Just faster. Mm-hmm. So learning how to run a business is step one. A franchise, I think, takes a lot of that away. They tell you where to do it, how to run it, like all the things, like where do you get the stationery printed? Who hosts the website? Who designs? Like all that is gone, right? They help you with that. The other part is like, what are you offering as the business? And is that a skill set? So like your brother, for instance, would have the skill set of the tax returns having the licensure, right? So it's like a little bit twofold. So you could almost be the operator for the business, and he could be the actual skill set you need to execute the business. I think, I actually just talked also with my brother-in-law about this. I think if you've researched the tax return, like CPA in terms of retail, so like CPA working with individuals for tax returns, there's a huge shortage, absolute massive shortage. So much so that they're recruiting at like the college level because there are so few people going into the field, and the field is so, the general age is so high. So I think that to me makes a ton of sense. I also think the tax return business is very interesting because if you don't mind working really hard for a set period of time, it is easier the rest of the year. So tax season. And if you're a CPA, then you can do businesses and trust. Mm-hmm. So those go into later extensions. And so maybe your timing isn't, you know, you're working a little longer, but those are higher priced items than a regular return. But a business pays a lot more, a trust pays more when it gets more complicated. And generally, you want a CPA for those types of, I'll just say like non-W-2. So I think that's a really interesting concept. And I think that tax practices, you could buy in, and probably the owners are, there's so many baby boomers retiring, they want to get out, and you could go in and see how it's running and then see how to structure it. And with that, there'd be recurring somewhat recurring revenue, right? They would have a client base for the most part. And I think that would be a little easier to finance.
Yeah, I think that's a really good idea, actually. There are a lot of baby boomers that are retiring.
A lot. So you could do too. So what I would investigate if I were in your shoes, knowing that you want to do this down the road, is I would investigate in your local area, who are the tax practices? And I would cold call them now over the summer while they're not doing tax returns.
Yeah.
Or look on their website, see who's older. And then if it's a solo person who's older, I would call and say, like, what's your plan? We're interested in getting into the tax return business. My brother's a CPA, blah, blah, blah. And then I would also investigate the tax return franchises and let them tell you what they offer and what the buy-in. I would see what the numbers look like. Because if you buy in now, it could be over a five-year period. The older CPA stays for 5 years, is paid out over five, bridges it between, you know, it's a relationship business, right? So then you're bridging it. It's not, you know, they retire one day, you ease them into retirement. Mm-hmm. That to me would be interesting. That's, I would do some research on, like, would you want to buy a private practice? And take a business that's already successful and buy into it? Or do you want to go the franchise route? And there's options for both with that specific. And I think it's a very underserved market. And so to me, as long as you like the concept of tax returns,
yeah, I do. It's funny because I remember when I was in high school and my mom was asking me what I wanted to be when I went to college. I was like, I don't know. Like, I like history. I might go and major in history. And my mom, being very rational and German, said, no, go be a nurse. You'll get a job immediately. So I did what she told me to do. And I don't regret it. I'm very, like, I've done very well for myself. I really like my job. But over the last few years, as I've educated myself more on personal finance, like, I really enjoy the nitty gritty and the numbers. And I would love to make a transition to work more within that field.
So here's what I think: if I were you, I would investigate both, talk to your brother. And then I think what I would do, I'm just going to take a guess, you're probably in a better financial situation if he's still in school or getting the CPA.
He is an accountant. He's studying for his CPA right now. So he does work full time. He also lives at home. So he's got a good financial situation too.
Because what I was going to say is, you could always keep your job and be the financial backer, because he's going to be doing the returns. And because, like, let's say, for instance, in theory, you find a solo practitioner. He has like one or two people working for him during tax season, but it's really just, and I'm going to say him. I haven't met that woman, many women, older accountants, maybe they're there, but it's a solo person. So the business might not be able to support two salaries, right? Mm-hmm. So maybe it starts as just him. You're the backer helping pay off the note. You're 50-50 partners or whatever you decide to do. And then the goal is, when we get revenue up to X, then you can come in as the operator, or maybe you start doing simple returns and you get your enrolled agent. But you could do it that way, right? So then there is less financial pressure on the business, because the business is not having to support two people, and it starts with him, because he'll be the CPA, the practitioner. You're the financial backer helping pay off the note. You're both equity owners. And then you, when you target what the revenue needs to be for it to support both of you, and then you ease your way into it. My advice would just be, like, not to do both at the same time if you could avoid buying a house and buying a business, or ease into it, right? Like, if you're easing into the business and you're helping financially support him, but you're staying W-2, then you could buy a house on top of that if you wanted to. But you can definitely do both. You're saving enough money. So they're all options. I think if I were in your shoes, you could always buy a house, right? Everyone does that. Buying a business is a little harder, a little bit more involved. I think personally, having bought multiple properties and then also houses is really stressful, like, one time, but then you're in the house, and then there's, like, never a small expense in a house. It's always like, has three zeros. Buying a business is a little harder. There's, like, a lot of things always going. You want to make sure it's working, you know. I guess if you think about the failure rate, like, buying a business has a much higher failure rate than buying a home and going foreclosure, right? Like, statistically, less people lose their homes, more people lose businesses, or businesses don't work. So I think I would lean towards investigating that now while you have a nice living situation, and then see what that looks like. Would you go the franchise route, solo practitioner route? And then map out the timing from there. And then based on that, I would decide about the house.
Okay, that sounds good. Kind of going off the franchising versus buying stuff private tax or independent tax corporation, the other thing that I was thinking about was, or I wanted to get your feedback on, financial coaching, because I do see that more and more people are doing that.
Yeah, a lot of people are doing it.
Yeah. So, and that's just more so focused on, like, helping people establish a budget. You're not providing any investment advice. Like, it wouldn't be a CFP.
Get out of debt.
Right.
Yeah.
Is that?
I would call it, like, here's what I would say. Like, I think there's a good need for it, because, like,
okay.
So with the CFP, right, it took, I think, around two, I did accelerate it, but 2 years for the classwork, right, to get all the classes done. And then I think you studied like 400-600 hours for the exam. And then my exam was 2 days and 10 hours. So it's like very high level finance, personal finance. Financial coaching is on the other extreme. And it makes sense, because why would you pay for a CFP to go over debt?
Yeah.
Like, I can do, like, you should take a HELOC versus not take a HELOC, whatever, like, easy debt. Or, like, more leverage, I guess, is what a CFP would help you with. Like, when do you leverage debt? But if you just have credit card debt and student loan debt, even pay for a CFP, but we're expensive, right? And so I think the financial coaching is like a really good, like, you're getting into this, you know that your situation is not set up the way you want it to be, and you want to get to the other side. Like, who's going to help you figure out your money? Like, square one. So I think it serves a really good need. And there are coaching designations that you can get. And I like that, because sometimes people come into our office and like, I don't, for like, to work with me doesn't really make sense for you with my price point if we have all this debt.
Right.
Like, it makes sense to work with somebody. So I actually like that idea as well. I really do think there's a huge opportunity with the doing tax returns. Like, if you just look at that industry. And it's not to say that you don't segue that, like, there isn't a financial coaching option tied to the tax practice for people who come in and it's kind of a mess. You could say, like, we also have a coaching program that we could put you in for a year trying to improve this. So they're in the same vein.
Okay.
So I don't think if you did one, you can't do the other. If you did one with the CFP and stuff, you would probably have a conflict of interest. Like, there's like a more regulation and stuff. But like with financial coaching, as far as I know, I don't think it's particularly regulated.
No, it's not. And I guess that's where the reservation kind of came from, because I know that you can get certifications, but you don't necessarily have to. And I was just like, I keep seeing that role pop up more and more and more. And I guess in the back of my head, I'm thinking, is there value in that, or is that more gimmicky?
Yeah, so I do think there's value in getting some financial coaching. I really think, to me, it's like, and a little bit of money therapy is what I'd say. Right? Like, okay, like, why are you overspending? Like, you know you don't have the money, right? Like, so, and accountability, right? Like, I'm not really your accountability partner. Some people need that. Just like, you know, they need a personal trainer. Or, you know, some people, like, where it makes sense to hire someone to help you get through something. I think it can work. I like designations. Obviously, you got the RN. I got the CFP. I think there's value in education and finding out, like, okay, like, if I'm going to do this, like, how should I structure it? And like, what is the recommendation? I don't know all of the coaching designations, but I do think that's a good idea. I think you just need to run, I think for you, I think you need to run the numbers on what will that generate and how much coaching are you going to do? And are you going to enjoy that work? Like, are you going to enjoy putting a budget, setting up a budget for someone, checking to see if they followed it, getting them out of debt? Or would you want, like, because the tax return to me is like maybe a little, they're different roles.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes more sense. Yeah. It sounds like the coaching is, like you said, more accountability, more handholding, especially for those that need to get out of a situation as opposed to build wealth. Like, you're helping them get to the point where they can build wealth. If I want to say,
yeah, that's the way I would say it. And then when you're ready to build wealth, when it starts to get, the way I think about it is like when it starts to get more complicated, to me, that's when you go see a CFP or someone at the next level.
Okay. Gotcha.
If you could talk to a financial coach and see if they agree with my analysis of their role, but I think it's more, cause like you, to me, like, why would you go and pay so much money to get like advice to like pay off debt? Like, I don't think, you know, you need to pay off debt.
Right.
Clearly you haven't paid off debt. You need some help doing that.
Right. That's where I've struggled with it, because I mean, I was in a lot of debt with student loans and a car loan at one point and a mortgage. And at the end of the day, it was just, you know, prioritize, and you know, you have to cut down somewhere and you need to allocate more money towards the debt. It's not that complicated. It's more so behavioral.
No. And it's behavioral. Yeah, and it being accountable. And I also think sometimes for some people, it's helpful to have somebody else let me look at it, and I'm just going to tell you. They know there's a problem, but sometimes it's hard when you're in it to be like, how do I get out of it? You're like in the hole, you're like, no, you don't want to be here. You're like, I'm not sure how to get out. Sometimes it's helpful to have someone say like, oh, get out this way. Here's the way we're going to go. Follow me, and this is how we're going to get you out of it. That's valuable. I just would think about, I think both are interesting career paths. I just feel very strongly there are not enough, there's just not enough CPAs, there's just not enough accountants. I think it's a huge issue. You could try both. I mean, the financial coaching is a lot easier to get into than buying a business. You can just start that.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true. So. And then I could also, I could make it a point to target these, either these tax franchises or these independent businesses, and be like, well, if you have any clients that are struggling with debt and maybe aren't good at tracking anything,
I'd love to be a I'd love for you to refer them to
referral.
Me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or if you bought it and you had already built the financial coaching on the side, right? Like if you were doing that on nights and weekends and you liked it and then you bought a tax practice and let's just say they had 1,000 clients, well, then you just email out to the 1,000 clients you just purchased. We also offer financial coaching. If you just bought a business with 1,000 people.
This, I don't know if this is a dumb question or not, but could I go to businesses within my area and purchase their client list to use for referrals, or could I just ask them to?
It depends. So like an accountant, I don't know if an accountant would, but you could go in and say, I'm offering financial coaching. I'd like to offer your clients a discount. Like, do you send a mailer out to your clients? Could I send something with your mailer? Like if I give a if I give $20 off to all of your clients, would you send it to your clients or something like that?
Okay.
They would have to approve it. And it depends on
right. You
know, who they are and who they're like. I don't know with the franchise if they would, but a solo practitioner might be fine.
Okay. Okay. That's good to know. Kind of off topic, but I did want to ask you about this too. So I haven't contributed to a traditional IRA this year yet.
And you cannot. You cannot do a traditional IRA.
Okay. Well, I'm glad I did.
Yeah. You can't do that because you're single and you're covered in an employer plan, and so you'd have to make less than $77,000. Okay. So you can't. When you have a workplace plan and you have good income, you can't do a traditional IRA.
Okay. So through my company, I do have the opportunity to contribute after tax dollars to my 401k.
Yes. Okay. So I love this. This is called like a mega backdoor Roth. You can do after tax into your 401k and then just find out if they offer an in-plan conversion. So then those after tax dollars, we'll just use round numbers. You put 10,000 in and we'll just say one lump sum. There's a big bonus. And then you want to be able to immediately convert it into the Roth.
Okay.
So the trick there is, you don't want it to get invested and then convert it because then there's a fluctuation component. So you just want to have it, usually it's an immediate, you put it in after tax, they immediately convert it to Roth. That's a great feature. Not many plans offer that. And if you want to do some research on it, it's known as a mega backdoor Roth. That's like what, if you Googled, it'll talk about it.
Okay. All right. I'll look into that. Perfect. Thank you. That's a huge help.
Yeah. Amazing. Keep me posted on the business. I think that's super interesting.
Yeah, I will. Thank you for this. This was super helpful. It was fun to bounce ideas off each other.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Thank you for coming on. And then for all of our lovely listeners, you can follow us on YouTube, TikTok, and Instagram. And if you like the show, it would be a huge help if you could share it with a friend and like or subscribe. All right. Thank you. Time for our disclaimer. The opinions voiced in this podcast are for general information only and not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. All performance references are historical and do not guarantee future results. Make sure that you consult with your own legal, tax, and/or financial advisor before making any decisions.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply.